Okay, so yeah, so 28 years ago, I worked with Bob. It was a wonderful 11 years together. And my wife became the worship director, which was unexpected when I came on board. That was about a year later. So 28 years ago, I know, that's just...
We were all a lot younger.
We were when I wore a younger man. So anyway, so we were much younger then. It was a great, great ride. And then Bob served as the RD in Fed Central for 10 years after leaving Springville. And what was cool was I was the chairman of the board. So vengeance is ours, saith Bill. And so now Bob was accountable to me. Loved every minute of that. And so now Bob is still on staff part-time, as if, with Fed Central as, what's your term?
Integration, peacemaking.
Her problem churches, problem people. And I'm on the board, the vice chair. And Terry, a dear guy from Springvale, been there for, your grandparents donated the land.
Oh, my great-great-grandparents, 175 years ago.
Wow. Donated the land. And they just celebrated 175th anniversary as a church last fall. So Terry's connected to that very, very much. So he's been a wonderful, very good businessman. And a shepherd all wrapped in one. So we had a great ministry and a great business, and he's been junking us. Retired for a while now. That was kind.
Yeah.
That was very kind. And still has a heart for ministry. So Father God, we thank you for rallying us together like this. Thanks for this opportunity to connect and to learn. It's amazing that you show up when you show up. We pray you would do that even today. Maybe leave with one or two new ideas and plant it in our hearts. Help us to do something with it. For the expansion of your kingdom, we ask. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Well, thank you, Bill. Appreciate that so much, and appreciate you coming here this afternoon talking about giving, moving from pressure to privilege. And it's a huge subject. Stewardship and learning to give away and invest assets from the worldly kingdom to a spiritual kingdom is a major journey all of our people in our churches need to learn and need to process. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk a little bit of foundational theology about giving, and then we're going to get into just some different things about maybe helping to create a generous culture in our churches. I did consultations for many years. I'm still doing them. I've probably done about 40 consultations in churches. And you're looking in a consultation, what is the positive and what are some of the areas they need to work on? And there was no question in several of our churches, one of the positives was they're generous. There's a generous spirit here. There's a willingness to give. And it was amazing to see it. And I did other churches where that needed work. That people's willingness to invest in kingdom for the gospel's sake was really lacking. And they needed to grow in that area. So it's interesting to get into different churches and see where they are. Let me just say, you know, obviously key verse, don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Let me say, I have a little thing about money. And you don't have to agree with this. This is just extra material. Now, I'm 68 years old. Okay, so what I'm finding is a lot of Christians who are now kind of coming into retirement, you're now like, you got to look at your money. You're like, okay, how much have I saved? You know, I'm like RSPs. Do I create a riff with that? I don't want to do that. What's my income? And so you tend to talk a little bit more about stewarding your money and setting yourself up. What I find, and this is terrible to say, I find Christians, especially in Canada, a little bit hesitant. There's a lack of transparency about where they are at financially. And I find what Canadians, Christians tend to do, they'll downplay their position financially. It's just a default. Now, I'm not saying you go around and say, oh, I got a lot of money. I put away, you know, $1.5 million and da-da-da-da-da. I'm not saying that. But what I'm tending to find is, and I know, well, she's a teacher in the high school. He's got a full-time job. They're probably making $180,000 at least combined. And you listen to them and they'll be like, man, my taxes are terrible. And housing values have gone down. And if you listen to them long enough, it's kind of like they're posturing, you know, we're kind of struggling here a bit. And I kind of have a thing about it where I kind of think, okay, I don't want to know how much money you have coming into your household or whatever, but let's be a little more realistic that as most Canadians, we're ahead of the curve compared to the world. And so we do have resources. We do have financial capacities to give to the kingdom, some more than others. So I just have a thing. So money sometimes doesn't get talked about, and I think it's a big issue. Let's go to the next slide, Terry. Richard Towner, he says, financial issues are a large part of day-to-day lives for everyone, including believers. Many of us spend the majority of our working hours making money, spending money, worrying about money, fighting over money, trying to protect money. Failure to address such major issues in people's lives may be one of the greatest acts of self-marginalization in the history of the church. It also ensures that giving to God's work in the world through the local church suffers. So let's go to the next slide. Here's the question. Why do some pastors avoid preaching on money? And so there's some suggestions. Go to the next one. Yeah. They don't want to be that guy that's always preaching on money. So you don't want to be tagged as the name it, claim it guy, you know, and sort of give the idea you put in $10 and out the bottom comes $100 kind of thing. And so, you know, you got to be a little careful if you're preaching on money. You want to stay away from that. Some don't have much money compared to some congregants. So when I came to Springvale in 1982, I was 27 years old. We really had nothing. We had nothing. People in the congregation, we had multimillionaires in the congregation. Now, my capacity through my perspective and my lens to relate or connect to them was very limited, and there's a bit of an intimidation factor going on because they're at the other end of their life. God has blessed and directed and for his purposes, you know, given them a lot. I don't have much. I'm okay, but I don't have much. So there's a big gap there that would sometimes prevent me about discipling people, about giving. I don't know, Terry, if you got something to say on that or no.
Yeah, I would say that if you're intimidated by it, pull some guys in who are in leadership positions around you or influencers in your church and let them walk with you through those conversations and through that part. Because they may be more comfortable and may be able to talk to a business person at a level that you can't or relate to them at the level that you can't maybe when you're starting out. Now, that'll change. But get people to help you. Don't try to do it all yourself.
Yeah, I think for me, I recognize very quickly my inadequacy to you know, share about generosity and disciple people in the ministry of giving. Now, as we grew the ministry, I kind of grew with it, but exactly what Terry's saying, bringing some key business people, or people, you know, who are gifted in that area, bringing them along, them into it with you, can be life-changing. And so over the years, and why I've got Terry here, seriously, I would say, on stewardship committees, we've, by God's grace, raised millions of dollars. But if you had said to me when I was 27 years old, you know, you're going to get to that place in your ministry, I would have laughed out loud. So we do have inadequacies, but we can grow and learn by drawing other people in or together to help us. Any other comments on that or thoughts? What's the next one? They don't want to create resistance and pushback. I mean, there's a thing. Listen, Christian people think that's not your business. This is mine. Don't meddle, you know, especially money. You know, this is mine. Well, it's not yours. You know, you're bought with a price. If you're a Jesus follower, that's all Jesus's. That's not yours anymore. And so trying to get people to cross the line and begin to understand that is a journey. But you know, we can't be intimidated by people in preaching about anything, we know. But especially about finances, which can be a very sensitive issue, pull back because we might step on some toes. No, you're all in. You're all in. And so I think that's one.
Let me throw something.
Yeah, go ahead.
pastors meddle in my life all the time really bugs me. But they do, and that's the Holy Spirit leading them. Meddle in people's finances, too. It's part of what you do, what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, and I think I got one here. They're uncertain about how to present a need and ask. And there's no question, I think, learning to direct people in giving and being generous, it's a discipleship journey. We'll get into that. It's a honed skill. It's definitely a learned tool. It's not something you come out of the blocks just kind of knowing, like you go to seminary, you get your theology down, you can kind of preach and teach on a variety of different things. But asking people in the congregation to give toward, you know, a God-led project that you're in, or a church plant, or a new staff member, or the renovation of the children's ministry, and it's going to be, you know, $10,000 to paint and put up some drywall. It is a learned skill, and so sometimes I think we need to grow and learn, and so that can create hesitancy. Some tend to be idealistic about multiplying ministry. Like, some pastors I'll just preach, and I'll just do funerals, and I'll visit the sick, and I'll get to the elderly, and the money will come in. And I've heard that. And so if I just do this, then this, well, no, I disagree with that. I think we have to intentionalize our capacity to teach the whole counsel of God, which includes being generous and enhancing the gospel by creating a generous culture, not about the size of the gift, but about the sacrifice of the gift. And so I think that's a big one. What else? They struggle with their own money management. Yep, that happens. They struggle harmonizing scriptures, seemingly opposing views on finances and things and money. So you read, elders are worthy of double honor. And then you read, no one can serve two masters. You can't serve God and money. Well, okay, is money good or bad? Is it wrong for me to ask for a raise, or maybe talk to one of the elders about, you know, where I'm at with my salary? No, you know, that could be a master, so you don't want to serve two masters. You get verses, you know, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, this is a gift from God. But then you go over to Psalm 37, better is the little that the righteous has than the abundance of many wicked. So you have one verse kind of promoting generosity and the grace that God gives in that. Then you have another one, look out for money, like, be careful. And so harmonizing sometimes those two things can be a factor in giving. Let's go to the next slide, Terry. Shifting people from feeling that they have to give to feeling that they want to give is a marathon. It's not a 100-yard dash. It's part of a lifelong discipleship process. In 2 Corinthians 4, Paul says, so then death is at work in us, but life is at work in you. And I always go back to that verse, you know, the Apostle Paul seeing this transfer of energy, talking to the Corinthians, and, you know, I am fading while I work with you. I'm giving my heart to you. I'm giving my life to you, building you into disciples of Christ. But I'm paying a price. I am fading, but you are flourishing. And so I think he's just relating to the fact that, you know, building disciples takes our entire lives. And so, especially in this area, getting somebody who's a basic pagan and has a worldview, they come to Christ, they're transformed by the grace of Christ, the forgiveness of Christ, they're now a new baby in Christ, they're filled with the Spirit, they're growing. Getting them to a place of generosity and willingness to give, that can take a lifetime. That can take a long, long time.
I've got a comment on
that. Yeah, go ahead.
One of the statistics that I heard recently, you've all heard of the Pareto principle, probably 80% of the money comes from 20% of the people, but I heard a Canadian statistic recently that said the reality is that 60% of the donations that are given in Canada to charities are given by 10% of the people. And that 10% tend to be the elderly. Mm-hmm. And that percentage of giving from the elderly is increasing. So there's two points there. One is, you can't forget to address the issues of the elderly and cast your vision and do all the things we're going to talk about. The other is that there is a huge need for education and training in the area of stewardship and giving and the principles that are provided in the Bible in that area. And it takes all kinds of training through a lot of years to get young people and middle-aged people there. So that's a scary statistic on one hand.
It is.
But it really shows the need to be educating and training people and talking about this issue, which Christ talked about, I think, more than heaven and hell.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Go to the next slide, Terry. I'm just kind of showing the learning process, you know. You've got to fill people with biblical principles, lay a foundation down of stewardship, and, you know, shifting in kingdom investment from the world's kingdom to the spiritual kingdom. People begin to believe, they have personal convictions, you know, and then the final, they do it, they practice it. So when I came out, I was in seminary. I know God had called me to full-time ministry. I'm training in cemetery. I'm training in seminary sometimes.
That's
Freudian. Sometimes. Yeah. Freudian. And, I had to pay. I needed money. I needed money to go to school. So in the summers, I worked with Paul Havercroft. They had a business, gardening business. And so I would work in the gardening business. I'd get my money and then go to seminary, pay my fees, pay my stuff like that. But as I went along, you know, I was being challenged by some of my profs. Like, if you're called into ministry, like, why don't you give your summer to the Lord, get involved in a local church, you know, and step out, like, trust God for your finances and where you're at. So, you know, even though, I had biblical perspectives on, you know, I believe them in my, but was I doing them? And I remember Dr. Scott, this is at Central Baptist Seminary many millennia ago, he called me in his office, he said, Bob, you're going to Cape Breton this summer, and you're going to serve under the pastor there as a summer intern, I've set it all up, forget about the gardening business. He just told me, and I'm like, whoa. So I was kind of forced over here. Now, I did, and I went, and I can't tell you, I don't have time to tell you, but it was life-changing in the area of money and trusting God for provision. It was life-changing. Guy totaled my car the first week I was there, totaled it, and not a part of the church. And he announced to me, I'm not giving you anything. I'm not paying you anything. You can't. I lent him the car. You can't do anything about it. That was it. And so I was borrowing cars all summer from people in the church and not really getting anything. I was living at the pastor's house. At the end of the summer, a woman gave me a used Mercedes. Her husband owned 4 McDonald's on the Atlantic coast. And at the end of the summer, she said, Bobby, come here. Look out the window. I was at her house on my farewell little get-together. And I'm looking at her. What do you see? Well, I don't know. A garden? No, in the parking lot. Well, I see a car. I'm giving you the keys to that car. It was a used Mercedes, and she had stapled a verse, you know, my God shall supply all your needs according to his love in Christ Jesus on the dashboard. The love offering they took up for me on the last Sunday was there was more than I ever made working in the gardening business. And it was this. It was, well, I know it. You know, no, I believe it, but now I'm doing it. And so that's the process. So it takes time. It takes, you can't just automatically expect that to happen, and you know, our people are at various places on that line, and so that's, I'm just letting you know, it does take time. Any comments on that? Go to the next one while we... Yeah, and so the pathway, I mean, this is kind of the theological progression of understanding biblical stewardship. You know, you have to have somebody, they acknowledge their sinful, self-centered nature, then they recognize God's complete ownership. You know, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. They accept Christ's offer of transformation. You are not your own. You're bought with a price. Old things are passed away. All things become new. You know, they have to choose God's eternal kingdom over the earthly kingdom. You know, my kingdom's not of this world, Jesus says. They become conformed to Christ's image. We're being transformed, conformed into the image of the Son. And then they begin to implement Christ-like generosity. God makes all grace abound to you so that in all things and at all times, you will abound in every good work. You've been made rich so that you can be generous on every occasion. And so money is just one of those things that comes and goes. I remember it was at Ortberg or somebody at Willow Creek and they were talking about it. I said, well, it's like one of those revolving doors in a big department store. And your money should be just like that. So you're living, you're working hard, you're getting money, you go through there, you give the money away, you go out, you come around, God gives you some money, you go through, you give it away, you go around, and it's just, you don't hold it. You don't get it and hold it. You're getting it to give it. Now, in proportion, not crazy, but it's kind of that idea that throughout your lifetime, it's getting, giving. You're getting, you're giving. And you're, it's just part of what it is to follow Christ and invest in the kingdom for the gospel. I like Randy Alcorn. Go to that slide there. That's one of the books that I would certainly recommend. Terry, you've got a story about Randy Alcorn's book.
Yeah, the Treasure Principle.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about other resources later, but this is a good one. And one of the things that struck us as a church, if we want people to be generous in the context of the church, then we need as a church to be generous. So we gave everybody in our congregation this book, and many others, I might add, the Treasure Principle. And one of the stories that I have on that is after we'd given them to everybody in the congregation, I was concerned that my kids hadn't read them. So I offered my daughter $100 to read the book. She was about 25 years old and figured $100 was a good deal for a short book. But it dramatically changed her attitude towards giving and tithing. And now she just turned 40. She's tied for that 15 years. And it has changed her attitude, her business, her relationship with money and her family. So it's great to give resources like this to your congregation. And rather than standing and, I'm not saying don't preach, but preaching, just doing it from the pulpit, there's other ways to get that kind of information out, and that's a good one.
His principles are really good. There they are. Grab the book. Like I had read that book so many different times, and then in prep for the workshop here, I kind of read it again. I'm like, you know what? This is even better than I remember. It's concise, lots of biblical, you know, verses substantiating. And again, it kind of gives a bit of a theology of stewardship, because money's not really about money. It's not, it's about impacting people for Christ. It's about expansion of kingdom for Christ's sake. It's about His glory. It's not about ours. So money's just a tool. It's just a commodity. The problem is, because it's so powerful, it's probably one of the gods, the chief gods of our world, is money. Because it gives power, it gives so much leverage in so many different ways for good, for bad. But these principles are really excellent. I love this. My heart always goes where I put God's money. And I'll just say this. Recently, I've got a tax-free account, and it's invested. And I went into TD Bank. We live in Huntsville now. This just happened a week ago. And, you know, it's not doing that great with the markets. And it's not a lot of money, but it's some money. And so she said, well, do you want to change it? You know, more foreign investment. I go, yeah, let's change it. So we changed it, you know. Well, I find myself at home now. I just get my phone on my TD app. And I'm looking, how did we do today? You know, and you're kind of following it. Because, you know, where you put your heart goes there. And so same thing, like in ministry, if you invest in God's kingdom, ministry, in people doing ministry, your heart will want to go there. You'll want to see where that missionary is serving. You'll want to hear about, you know, what did that particular offering that I gave, you know, how is that ministry going? It just helps to expand, I think, your magnification and your magnetism toward those things that are of God. And anyway, there's a lot there to go, but I won't go down all of them. Okay, let's go to the next one. Let's just finish with it. Well, not finish. We're going to get to just some comments about creating a generous culture. That's what we'll end off on. But just some realities and revelations that I wrote down about money. Now, these are from my own journey. You could probably add 100 more of them. Here's one. People have more money than you think. Now, not all the time, but people have more money than you think. You can't judge a book by its cover. Like when I got to Stouffville in 1982, I come up out of the city, I'm at Forward Baptist Church in Toronto. It's sort of a rural community, small church. I think the square footage might be 4,000 square feet in total. And I'm looking at people in the church, I'm like, well, you know, this is a dear woman, and, you know, God bless her, and I'd visit her, and da 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 da. Well, like 20 years later, she dies and she gives $50,000 to the church through her inheritance. Now, I'm like, what? Like, you would think she doesn't have anything, but you can't think like that. And so I think sometimes perceptions can deceive us. Not that you're out there trying to poach money from people, but you can underestimate how much is there for the glory of God. Terry, you got a story on that.
Yeah, I have a story that I think is really cool. And you can decide whether it's a miracle or not, but I think it was. A new guy from the church was at a charity auction that we were holding to raise money for the church, and he and I decided to buy a fishing charter on Lake Ontario. I get seasick on Lake Ontario, but that's beside the point. Anyway, the two of us went out on this charter, and I started to unfold a story to him that I had heard the week before. I drew this picture, actually. If you can picture this, our property at the church is the orange, and it sits at the corner of two major intersections going into Markham, going into Stouffville. We owned the orange, but there was a little house right on the corner of the church property. And I told him that this cool thing had just happened. We had tried to buy that house for several years, couldn't afford it, were in debt. And about a month before, we just had a major fundraiser, got rid of all the debt that we had at that time so we could do some development, but we could never afford that house. Our treasurer was visiting his barber in another town, Richmond Hill, which is several miles away, and the barber said to him, "Hey, you go to that Springvale church, don't you?" And he went, "Yeah, I do." And the barber said, "Well, I own that house on the corner of your property that you've tried to buy for several years." And he said, "At Christmas, we had a renter in there who set the curtains on fire with some Christmas candles. And I'm just settling up with the insurance company. And if you would pay me the difference between what the insurance company owes and what I originally wanted for that property, I'd be interested in selling it to you. Would you be interested?" Well, he came back and told us. I was on the stewardship committee. So I'm telling this to the guy in the boat who's new to the church, and I wasn't expecting anything. I was just sharing my heart about the vision and the passion of the church and building relationship with him. And he said, "Hey, I think it's $120,000 he wants for the difference. What if I gave you $40,000 and you went and raised the other $80,000? And I went, "Cool," right? So I'm all excited. And then after I left, I went, "How am I going to raise $80,000? We just had a major fundraiser." I went to the board, told them what had happened, and they said, "We can't ask the congregation. They've given sacrificially in the last month. We just can't go out and ask them." And I said, "Well, can I get your permission just to go and tell people, right? Just like I did with the guy in the boat." And they said, "Yeah, go tell people." So I went and I told everybody I could think of, people over coffee, people at lunch, people in the lobby of the church, people in the parking lot at work, anybody I could think of. My sister who doesn't go to the church lived in downtown Toronto, whoever. And about a month and a half later, the original guy on the fishing boat called and he said, "Hey, you know that money I was offering to give you, what's happening with the other 80? So Bob and I went to visit him and we walked in and he said, "Well, what's happening?" And I said, "I haven't raised a penny. Everybody said it's a great thing, but nobody's given me any money." And he said, "Well, how about we just forget it, and I'll throw $10,000 in the offering and we'll just forget it." And I said, "No, if God's in it, he'll do it, and if he doesn't want it to happen, he'll tell us what to do next." So I went home, and I must admit I walked the street I live on, and I prayed to God. It's like, "What are you doing? I can't figure this out." And I got this feeling like, "I just wanted you to know that if something happens, it's of me, not of you." Okay? So he taught me a lesson. Within 24 hours, I had half the money. Within 48 hours, I had the other half without ever making another call. The first person to call was my sister. She said, "You know that thing you told me about? I'm writing checks for charities." Now, she hasn't given to Springvale. I haven't gone to Springvale in 40 years. She said, "I was just thinking, do you still need something?" I went, "Yeah, I still need something." She wrote me the first check, but I had people walk up to me on the beach at NBC. I had people walk into my office, never solicited, never called again. And they just laid checks down, handed me checks. "Yeah, I've been meaning to do this." Within 48 hours, we had all of the money. And I phoned the guy and said, "Got good news and got bad news." He said, "What's the good news?" "I got the other 80. What's the bad news?" "You owe me a check for 40. But God was in it. And it just goes to, there's people have more than we realize. And although they've given sacrificially, he had more resources out there we just need to tap into.
Yeah, the second one I had down there is,
that took a long time.
No, it's good. No. People are donating money on a regular basis to ministries outside your church. So you can get mad at that. You can be frustrated with that because the general fund's down and you're really struggling. But the truth of the matter is, they've already given. There's tithes offerings. They're giving their tithes to the church, which is great. Then they have over an abundance of offerings that God, and that is monies that they're looking at other ministries, maybe the church's ministry, but that is just happening. That's just a reality. And I don't think we can fight it. I think we do have some answers about maybe how to respond to that. But that is a reality that is happening. Money's not about money. It's about how money can be used to impact lives for the gospel of Jesus Christ, no question. We often haven't discovered or utilized individuals within our churches with the gift of giving. Like, read the spiritual gifts of, well, we got a new children's workers come to the church. Let's talk to them. They're really gifted in children's ministry. Oh, you know, we got somebody who can lead, you know, musical worship. Let's get them. They play a great bass guitar, you know. Oh, there's somebody that gives away a lot of money. They have the gift of giving. Let's go talk to them. No. You were often not following up with people who truly have the capacity and the desire and the spiritual gift of giving. Now, it might be in hospitality. It might be in the way they are able to kind of be unselfish in things that they have, you know, loaning out whatever, people can come to their home, whatever. It could well be in the area of money. And so I think sometimes just realize, include that in your scope of unleashing the gifts for the body of Christ.
You mentioned the word unselfish. I went to a fundraising conference in Dallas, Texas a few years ago, and there was a statement made that really struck me, and it was, people don't give because they're selfless. They give because they want to be self-fulfilled. And it struck me that if we give them opportunity to be fulfilled in those areas where they have a passion or an interest, then it can go a long way to developing and growing the church and stewardship.
Oh, yeah. I put down here, there are often people in leadership positions who are not tithing or contributing to the church. And I remember going to John Maxwell. He was classic on this, some of his teaching, which helped to really hone my skills, I think, in teaching discipleship and generosity. And understanding that, okay, in the vetting process for board members or key ministry leaders, somewhere along the line, it is good to say to them, listen, we're assuming you're tithing and contributing to the ministry of the church. Because I definitely had, I got the Springville the first 10 years, I began to realize there were two or three people in key positions that were not giving to the church. And it was a brutal reality. I mean, I just presumed and assumed. Now, I'm not saying, oh, I was looking at how much you make, you got to give X amount in order to serve on the, you know, I'm not talking about that. But at least having some opportunity where you're vetting them about their commitment to the gospel, the local church as a member, and that if they're going to serve in this area, you know, you are contributing to the needs and ministry of the church. Any comments on that? It gets awkward. But I think at times we need to do that. I don't know, Randy, if you guys have any kind of vet about that kind of thing, or know here at Emmanuel, or
I can vet that behind the scenes.
It's personal, of course, but you're not getting to numbers, but you're getting to the kind of the principle of the thing that they're giving. I put this down. Matthew 6, 3 and 4 is often misapplied and used by immature believers to cover their lack of obedience. I mean, guys, in Matthew, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people to be seen by them. So, it's speaking about intentions and motive. So, if you've got a worship band and they're leading a service on a Sunday morning and they're in it for themselves, and you can see they're like, wow, they're supposed to be bringing us into worship, but they're kind of putting on a concert, you know, you get suspicious about their motive. What's their motive? And so what Jesus is talking about, motive, you know, when you give to the needy, don't sound a trumpet, you know, like the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. So it comes down, when you give to the needy, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Well, in Exodus 25, when they overgave to the building of the tabernacle, did people see what they're giving? Of course they did. So they're bringing fabric, they're bringing gold, of course they did, they saw them. And when Barnabas sold the land, where is an axe, what is it for, whatever, and he gives the money, he lays it at the... Did people see that? Of course they saw it. Of course. So what, Barnabas, okay, you're out. You know, you're giving to be seen of men. So what I'm trying to say is, a lot of Christians will hide under that verse who aren't giving. Some will, some. They kind of use that as cover. Well, you know, you're not supposed to know that. We do it in secret. We do it in secret. Most of the ministries we're involved in aren't in secret. And so you're just trusting people that their motives, while they serve in children's ministry or whatever, you know, that they're doing it for the Lord. Well, the same can apply for giving. So I'm not saying let people know how much you give, but when was the last testimony in church you heard about somebody who learned to give generously to the church? Well, we don't want to do that. Well, why not? Somebody gives a testimony about how God brought their marriage together. Or somebody gives a testimony about, you know, how the ministry of the men's ministry helped them hold accountability to an area of impurity in their lives. Well, so I don't think the application is never talk about the principles of money or always keep that ultra hidden. I think it's about, okay, attitude. And why are we giving? And that's what we're supposed to be looking for. Now, there is a reality with money in the scriptures. It's a snare, and beware of it. We're warned about it because of its power. You can't serve two masters, God and money. But at the same time, you don't want to bury the whole thing. And so I'm just trying to, you know, throw that out there. Any comments about that or any thoughts?
I think your comment about being discerning is really important. We had a gentleman in our church who offered, I think, to give us around $100,000 for an expansion of one of our facilities, but he wanted it done in the name of his family, and we turned that down because we felt that maybe the motivation wasn't right, and I think that was the right thing to do at the time. As it turned out, that same individual gave several other times without wanting the mention, and we took it. So discernment is hard.
I had a big lesson on this. You've just triggered a big lesson. I was young. The church was small, like 100 people. And every now and then, when we would have an extra high donation, they would come and say, okay, we're not trying to, but we did have a donor this morning, and they gave, you know, way over and above. And so I'm like, okay. So one Sunday morning, we got like $15,000. Now, the whole budget of the church would be $100,000. So somebody gave $15,000, it was an outsider, but it was directed toward that kind of thing. Another ministry, we weren't doing any, we didn't have that on our books at all. So the treasurer came to me and said, look, it's awkward, you know, this money, blah, blah. I said, okay, give it to me. So before I went to the donor, I went back to one of our accountants, and we had many of them, Bill. I went to Bill, not Bill Thornton, but another Bill. He'll know who I'm talking about. And Bill said, what's the problem, Pastor? And I said, well, we just got 15,000. You know, this is incredible. Now, of course, I'm young. I'm like, 15,000? Like, this is incredible. We can use it. Well, is he direct? Yeah, he wants to direct it to, you know, he said, oh, you got to give it back. And I remember I was in his little office in the church. And I'm like, what? You go, no, give it back. No, we're not going to. You can ask him, like, it could come to the areas in our budget, our general funds. But it can't. No. He was just, I'm like, well, I'll never get this again, kind of thing, you know. And I went back to the donor and I said, listen, da-da-da-da-da, you know, we don't have an area in the budget. You know, oh, no, I'm not changing it. So, got to give the money back. And so some people sometimes, through their selfishness maybe, want to direct their gift to something that really is not in the purview of the mission of the church. And so sometimes motive does get in the way. And you've got to just trust the Lord. And so it was a big lesson for me. It wasn't huge money, but it was enough to teach me that. Okay, let's keep moving. Yes. Yes, Pastor. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, but it's not all about the budget, okay? So everything doesn't have to go to the budget, and we're going to talk about that. So that may have been a segue, but anyway, carry on.
No, it's good. So let's go to the next slide. Let's go to the next slide, Terry. Terry, next slide. Oh, yeah, yeah, get with the program. Okay, so cultivating a generous culture in the church. Let's go. We'll go to the next one. We've got to get to this. Yeah, next one. Preach and teach on the subject of giving and stewardship as you come across it in the regular rhythm of speaking. Okay, so well over 2,000 Bible references about stewardship, giving, tithing, possessions, generosity. Approximately 15% of all Jesus said was about money and stewardship. 11 out of the 39 parables touch on this subject. God makes more promises around the theme of giving than any other subject. So if you do a study on faith, prayer, love, kindness, there are more promises in the scriptures around giving than all of those subjects, probably multiplied by two or three. So you can't avoid it. And so as you come across it, you're preaching the whole counsel of God, go for it. Go for it. Just teach it. Teach it. Second one. Infuse giving and stewardship training throughout the church's ministry portal. So I think what's significant is you're trying to, in all of the different ministries you have, do some training, you know, money management workshops or seminars, life groups. I think at times we did take Randy Alcorn's book and suggest it for all of our life groups. Let them go through that. Youth and children's ministries, new members classes. You can talk about generosity, that kind of thing. I think it's important at all different levels. Doesn't matter where all people are at as far as age group or whatever. You're teaching about biblical stewardship in one way or another. And it may even be about budgeting and helping yourself with money management, young couples or people who might be struggling with that kind of thing. CAP ministry is great for that. It's always good to just infuse it through. I don't know any comments about that, or has anybody had experience doing that and had some encouraging thing happen? Yeah.
One thing is to get it in early. Like, I noticed the transition between teenage to getting a job, kind of college age, coming out of college. People, like that thing on older people give, right? The young people have a mentality like my parents give, where that's something that older people in the church do. And, I mean, depending on your churches, everybody has different demographic breakdowns, but we have fairly balanced age demographic. And so one time I sat down and I said, this is our church budget. And I said, this is how many people are in our youth group between age 17 and 22 that are all working. And I said, you realize, like, if we just take an average minimum wage, if you youth gave to the church, you'd give 15% of our budget.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
And they didn't realize.
Yeah.
And, like, so it's like, it's not a small number.
No, no, it's great.
It's like, you guys would be giving like $65,000.
Yeah, yeah. I love that.
And it just, like, you can see the light bulbs go on.
I remember at Willowdale Baptist Church, I'm 14, I got two older brothers, Richard Missionfield, my older brother, you know, in business and stuff. And I should know this because I'm with the fellowship. The fellowship would put a plea out to churches to donate toward a particular ministry in a church. Maybe a church is at a fire and it's going toward renovation costs or stuff like that. And so they would, I forget the name of it, because they ask us to this day, do you know some churches that can, it'll come to me. But what's
the builders or something?
Builders, yeah, something. It has something to do with it. Anyway, so they're passing out pledged to sign up for this, that you would be asked coming to your home. So, I mean, I'm at the church, and I don't know where my head was, and Roger's putting something in the plate. Well, what are you putting in there? He goes, I just signed you up for Baptist Builders. I'm like, what? And the plate kind of went by. And I'm like, wait a minute, Roger, I'm 14. He goes, what do you mean you're 14? You got money? Like, you get allowance? You cut lawns? You know? And it was just interesting. Yeah, you know what? At a young age, I would get these. I'm like, okay, I'm going to give $5. I'm going to give $5, you know. And I started, but yeah, I think it's significant to catch people at every different level. And, you know, again, it's the privilege of it. It's just, what a privilege to invest in life-changing ministry. And that you're trying to always communicate. Go to the next one, Terry. Recruit people from being spectators into being participants. Owners take on responsibility better than renters. And so we know this, that if we can get people involved in ministry and have them, you know, there on the playing field, you know, often they begin to understand that, oh, this costs money, you know, and people are giving to allow this youth ministry to go on, or this trip to Haiti. Maybe I could do that. And there's something about getting people understanding they can give of themselves in ministry and of their gifts. And then as they do that, they may tend more to have their finances follow as they kind of learn the culture and see how things really work. I think that's a good one in trying to get a generous culture. Let's go to the next one, Terry. Listen, I wrote this down. Lean into his promises about being generous or magnanimous means big-souled. Don't be cheap. Have a big soul when it comes to giving. Share them responsibly and unreservedly. So test me in this. This is God in our face. Okay. He's mad at the churches. They're not giving. Their tithes and offerings are being withheld in Malachi. And God says, hey, test me in this. You give me your tithes. And you will be stunned at your barns over... Like, test me. Come on. Come on. You want a piece of me? Come on. It's so challenging. And it's in the area of giving. Test me. Like, come on. See if you can outgive me. Like, I just find some of these so powerful. Give, I'll give back. Pressed down, shaken together, and running over. I used to, you go out on Halloween. Okay, maybe that's a sin. So I go out on Halloween. We are in a subdivision in Thornhill. I would fill a sack. And about 3/4 of the way through, I'm like, the sack's full. So I would go like this with the sack, so things could go down. You get it compacted because you want your sack full. You want it concentrated. So you're doing this with your sack. And then you're going to the next house, then you're doing this, in between houses. Get it down, pack down. But Jesus is like, just get, that's what I'm going to do. You give me I'll tell you what I'll do with what you're going to get back. I'm going to shake it down, I'm going to concentrate it, and I'm going to pour it back in your lap, overflowing. Like, when you read that, that is challenging. That's huge stuff. Sow sparingly, reap sparingly. Sow generously, reap generously. I love this one in Proverbs. I could go on and on, and you know these verses. One man gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds and comes to poverty. Refresh others, you will be refreshed. But a lot of the commentators, when they're splitting this verse down in Proverbs 11:24, when one man gives freely, yet gains even more. The idea is when you give generously, he is going to extend the boundaries of your influence. Or he's going to multiply the scope of your life and ministry. And so as you give, it's not just, you're not giving to get it, you're giving to be a blessing. But in the process of doing that, part of what God promises is, I'm going to expand your life. I can expand your life. So if you're giving to a ministry in Africa and they're building, wells and things like that, somebody might email you from Africa and say, hey, listen, with your gift, this is what happened, da, 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 da. Then out of that, you're now flying to that village in Africa. You're meeting the villager. What's happening? Your life is multiplying. It's expanding your scope. So it's interesting, I think, that in some of these promises of giving that we're to lean into, it's just not about things and money. And it's our whole lives' capacities are multiplied as we give. And so I think we personally have to lean into these and ourselves experience this with the Lord. And then as we share that, now we share it responsibly because, again, you don't want to be sounding about money all the time or giving the idea that it's tit for tat. You give $5, you're going to get 100 back. You're not a prosperity gospel preacher. We don't believe that. So you're sharing these things responsibly, but you're really leaning into them and sharing them unreservedly. I don't know, Terry, if you have anything on that. Maybe not.
No.
Okay, let's go on to the next one. Any comments about that? I'm kind of dominating. We got like 5 minutes left. Eh? Kind of, yeah. Okay, what's the next one? Utilize testimonies and stories that highlight growth in giving. We had a guy in our Bible study. We had a men's Bible study for years, and one of the guys one night shared, and he'd been a believer for a long time. I'm not doing well. My finances are bad. I think he had his car accident. Anyway, and he came out and he said, I'm not a giver. Like, I've never really given to the ministry of the church. I'm not a tither. And he was along in his life as a believer and knew he should have been. And it was interesting that night. Now, in that group, there was a lot of safety. and a lot of transparency. And Guy spoke into his life, and he did. He started, Guy's to help him financially in his management. There were some taxes he needed done, and they rallied around him to get that done. And in his kind of discipling and growth, it was amazing to see how he grew as a believer as he was obedient and desirous to give back to the Lord and to begin tithing and through offerings. And it was transformational. So much so, I had him give his testimony in the church. One of the little side issues in that, he had cracked his car up or something like that. And one of the guys in the small group went up to him after and said, I'm going to give you my car. He had many cars. He said, see, I'm going to give you that. He got a car.
It was a Jag.
A Jaguar. So he had just shared, and he goes home in a Jaguar. So his wife's got the car in the shop. He's coming home. He's like, what's this? It's my car. I can't explain it to you. It truly happened. But I read his testimony on, before he gave it in the church, on kind of how God had worked in his heart to begin to give. And it was really moving. It's powerful stuff. So I think that can build a generous culture. I think we need to communicate impact, ministry, return on investment. Yeah, go to the next one. Yeah.
I'll just throw a comment in.
Yeah, go ahead.
In our church over different seasons, there was a season we went through where it was a song and a sermon, don't get into that stuff. And our givings went down, and the motivation to give went down, and the enthusiasm for ministry went down. And after a lot of advocating on my part, they started to do that and sharing stories, and the givings go up. People want to know the impact. They want to see what's going on. They want to hear it. They want to be part of it. And if you bury it and don't tell them, then I think you do a great disservice to your congregation, because, you know, we sing a song about God is good, 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 and it keeps on going, going, going. Sorry. That's a pet peeve. Let's talk about what God has done in our church this week that's good in the hearts and lives of people.
Yeah, there's a lot. That's good, Terry. Go to the next one. We've got to keep going. Here's three books that Revolution in Generosity. That's a compilation of probably 15, some of them theologians, some of them not. But it's a great book for developing a theology of stewardship. And I'll leave that up for the front. This one's a little more practical, Contagious Generosity. I think that's the one you had talked about a little bit, by Willard and Shepherd. And then we've got the Treasure Principle. So I've written down those. There's another one. Okay, explain that.
If you want, this is called Maximized by Searcy. And it's probably the most practical book I ever read in stewardship, because I've taken lots of courses, and they say send out letters, send out thank yous, do this, have a stewardship week. And it's like, how do I do that? How do I do this? Well, Searcy wrote this book called Maximize, and I was on the stewardship committee, led it for 30 years. But this was one of the most helpful documents that I had in how to actually physically do things and give me advice and direction and how to do it. That's a great book if you're interested.
And there's some websites, too. They're in your notes there. You know what? Some of them are great. Like, they give you good ideas of maybe doing stewardship series, different applications, studies for small groups, that kind of thing. Let's go to the next one, Terry. What is the next one? Making room in your budgeting for pockets. Okay, this is you kind of know where I'm going with this.
This is a biggie.
And this, some of you may not agree with this. So, you know, you crack your budget out. Okay, let's trust God. You know, we're going to grow. So you're putting in that factor. Have you ever thought saying, okay, we have a missions team that is going to go to Dominican. They're going to help build a church. Why don't we allow in the budget $25,000 toward their support and supplies to build the church in Dominican? Because when you put that in your budget, okay, that's over and above, it's in your budget. It's interesting how you have people who have extra finances, they're giving to the church, they're faithful, but they love Dominican Republic and they love missions. And so it allows them a pocket to give to that otherwise that money you may not see. It may go to another ministry somewhere. And so what you're doing, you're kind of, and you don't want to overdo this, and you want to make sure you're careful on, you know, what your budget is calling for as far as even faith in it. But I remember we needed renos done down. Our church had was honeycombed with small rooms and stuff like that. And we needed to renovate. And it was only going to be about $15,000. And depending on the size of your church, you know, you're proportioning this. And we thought, well, you know what? Why don't we put that in, $15,000? Because we've got grandparents whose kids are in the children's ministry. They want to give to something like that. And so it was over and above our regular givings. But money came in. Like, it's like, well, we got $15,000 to renovate the children's ministry downstairs. So sometimes your pockets, you don't want to get carried away with it because you don't want to damage what it is as leadership you're presenting to the church. But this to me got a little bit transformational in the ministry at Springvale. Now, sometimes we overdid it, but I was stunned at how people who had over and above interest in different things, and if you created a pocket, it would come in.
This goes back to people don't give because they're selfless. They give because they want to be self-fulfilled. It may fulfill a grandparent's need to provide for a Sunday school room, or it may be education, it may be youth ministry, it may be missions, but give them opportunity, because it'll go to Youth for Christ, or hopefully nobody's there. But it'll go to another organization, maybe outside your church, where they have a passion for that ministry. So give them opportunity.
Okay, two more. Let's go to this. We're going to end. We're closing it down. We're going to end. Dream. Okay. Big vision attracts bigger donors. And I think this is huge. Like, don't underestimate what the Lord can do through the ministry of your church. Don't underestimate what the Lord can do through the ministry of your church. So, you know, as you get together as leaders, you're praying, you're looking, you know, think big. Like, trust the Lord for big steps. And it could be anything. You know, adding another staff member, that could be a huge step for a church, an added extra to a budget. That's a giant step. Oh, we'll just use interns from Heritage. No, talk about, you know, maybe getting a full-time, you know, youth pastor or whatever, you know, community outreach person. And think big, because when you do that, it attracts people in the church often who are able, and people step up. It's amazing. But if you keep it down, sometimes those monies go to other visions and other things, which is okay. I'm not against that. But I think that's a big one in the church. It's just as you kind of, you know, prepare vision, think big. And then the last one, and this is it. I know my time is up. Cultivate your ability for the ask. How to ask the church family and individual donors to participate generously in giving to the church's vision. When I came on as regional director, they gave me money and paid for me to be trained by a stewardship individual. And his training, man, it really helped me. And what I'm trying to say by that is, as we grow in our capacity, you know, as trying to be disciplers and steward people in the gift of giving and creating generosity, you learn to ask. You learn to ask. So a friend of mine, I won't use his name, and myself, we needed $200,000 in bonds. We went to a donor on a Tuesday night. The man came out. We were sitting there. And he said, how much are you asking for? We said, well, we need $200,000. Well, is there a limit to how much one person can give? Now, at that point in my life, to think somebody would give $200,000, just write a check to, I mean, I'm like, well, we didn't know what to say. So the guy I was with, he didn't know what to say. He's like, well, you know, we're thinking maybe, I think it was $30,000 would be the maximum, because we don't want one person holding all the bonds, which is kind of smart. $30,000. He said, this is exactly what he did. He got up, he said, oh, you got to talk to my wife. And he went, and Louise came in, okay, the wife,
no
and she
names.
Goes, no names. And it's like, don't worry about him, don't worry about him. What's the maximum? $30,000. Okay, put me down for 30. Now, that was it. That was just the wife. The husband would have got 200. Like, no, but the ask. I have learned to ask people for $1 million. Now, when I'm 27, you know, I can't do that. I don't know how to do that. But I have learned, I've actually had donors say to me when I was regional director, you better ask me for a lot of money. I've had donors say to me, you better ask me for a lot of money. Because they've had a lot of people come through, could you support me $100 a month? And the level they're at, it's like, don't talk. You got to go talk to, you know. And so they'll say to me, ask me for a lot. And so I have had and learned by God's grace and the help of other believers to be able to ask, I think, well, a donor for $1 million. Now, I never got $1 million, but I have had incredible ways in which God has donated. It just blew my mind what the Lord has helped. So hopefully this has got your whistle kind of wet about generosity and what the Lord can do. And I thank you for spending the afternoon here at our lovely workshop.
Emmanuel Baptist.
Any questions?
Questions. By the way, Emmanuel, generous. These guys here are generous. These guys have I believe you've got a culture here of generosity, and their capacity here to serve, even at our conference, these guys are unbelievable. Like, they just give. They're serving, cleaning up. How can we help you? They've been amazing. So trying to move the conference, we're like, oh boy, where are we going to find that? So they've been wonderful, just wonderful. And it's a good tribute to the Lord. What's that? I know, no, we're not going to move. No. We'll cut that from the tape. Thank you very much. Come and look at these books if you want. Talk to Terry of Bethesda. And it's been great. Thank you. We're done.
Thank you. Woo!